Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. Hello, everyone. This is Lori. Just me today, not Kate. So Kate and I agreed that it might be helpful if I did a little bit of a recording about memory and how memory functions in our brains and how trauma impacts memory. Because obviously it is, for folks to understand why now, where we've referenced that so far already. Why is Kate talking about it now? And some of you listening have known Kate for many years, and maybe you're asking yourself, right? So how is it that she functioned one way for a long time and now suddenly is functioning differently now? If we don't understand how memory operates, people sort of tend to fill in the blanks, right? So without information, we use our existing body of knowledge to explain to ourselves why things are happening. And it's sort of easy without the knowledge of how memory works to misinterpret why someone would not perhaps be able to articulate a memory of a traumatic event 5 years ago, and now suddenly they can. So this is where I think sometimes people get confused and think that it's a created memory. Whether that is that they've been manipulated into believing something, or that they are manipulating people, or they're not telling the truth. But remembering that the statistic is that 90 to 98% of sexual abuse allegations are found to be factually accurate. That makes a very small percentage of allegations that are ultimately proven to be not true. Which makes us now have to go back and say, okay, so then how is it that perhaps people are able to talk about their trauma at one point when they were not able to at some point in the past? So let's talk a little bit about memory. So hang in there. This is going to be a little bit of a science nerd thing, but I'm going to give an easier sort of way to a word picture for it when we get through some of the science part. So just bear with me. Okay, so memory is actually divided into two parts. There's the explicit memory, which are the conscious memories, the things that we can verbally explain. They are things like our grocery list, or the facts that we need to remember for a test, or phone numbers and birth dates. Implicit memories are usually not conscious and not able to be talked about with words. They are like things that we do sort of automatically, like words to a favorite song, or brushing our teeth, or riding a bike. Sometimes when we've driven the same place over and over and over again, even that is kind of an implicit memory. Some of us have found that, you know, honestly, I've done this driving places at times where I'm like, oh, wait, actually, I'm heading in one direction because that was sort of the automatic way that my brain wanted me to go. And then I realized, actually, I wanted to go somewhere else. That is implicit memory. So implicit memory includes like our physical experience of something, our sense of it, our perception, the emotions, the behaviors. What it does not include, however, are the facts and the autobiographical details. That's all explicit memory. Sorry, that is explicit memory. So implicit are sort of the automatic things and the sense of things, and explicit is where the facts lie. So explicit is really what we usually think of as memory, right? It's the thinking memory. It's the memory we can remember and put words to that can be accessed with our language centers. So here's a little bit of an easier way to think of it. I think of memory like a puzzle, right? So implicit memory is the random pieces thrown out on the table. If you've ever done a puzzle, you know that each piece doesn't really seem to make any sense until it starts to get put together. explicit memory is the whole puzzle once it's all put together and we can see how it all goes together and have the whole picture. We could describe it with our words. We could see all the detail. But here's the thing. In order to have a real permanent memory, right, the explicit memory that we can actually tell people about, we need a part of our brain called the hippocampus. Okay, the hippocampus is the part of our brain that pulls all the raw material that our kind of body experienced and puts it into a whole picture. It also puts a timestamp on the memory and transfers it into long-term permanent memory where it can be pulled out. That's the only way to get it into conscious thought. But here's the important thing. The hippocampus is, frankly, just simply not online just because of brain development until around 3. So anything that happens prior to 3, we don't really have explicit, right? Verbally, or we can't articulate memories that happened before 3. Implicit memories are still there, right? The sense of it, the experience of it. But even after someone is 3, whose hippocampus has developed perfectly fine, they can, during a traumatic event, check out in a way, like disappear in their own brain in a way so they can't, literally cannot remember it later. So sometimes that happens on purpose. Like if you're being attacked, you can focus on the wallpaper on the wall in the room. If you do that, you pretty much take your hippocampus out of the picture. So that is a literal example. So back when we were understanding more and more about kind of how trauma affects the brain, I read a report of a woman who said she used to just draw flowers, the same flower over and over and over. And she had no idea why she was drawing this flower, where it came from. And at some point she was visiting a family member and looked at a photograph from a family member's home. And it was the flower that she'd been drawing. And it turns out that she had actually been sexually abused in the room, that the flower was the wallpaper on the wall. And during her trauma, she focused so hard on the flower that she sort of disconnected her hippocampus. So she did not, until the moment she saw the photograph, she did not have the explicit memory of that event. She had the implicit memory, but she did not have the explicit retrievable memory that she could talk about. But that checking out, that taking the hippocampus out of the puzzle, so not developing the explicit memory, can also happen automatically. So we have a stress response system that's wonderful. It's designed to help us in an emergency. So if our brains detect danger, there is an automatic system that sets off that includes all kinds of neurochemicals meant to help us run or fight or hide, which is great, right? If you are trying to get away from a dog that wants to bite you or an attacker or something frightening, we do want to have all of those systems functional so that we can run or fight or hide. But the thing is that if we secrete high levels of cortisol and adrenaline, which are those stress hormones, the hippocampus actually shuts off temporarily. So we have, again, that hippocampus, which is critical for creating explicit memory, the kind of memory that can be talked about. So if someone says to you, hey, wow, I heard that, you know, you had a thing with a dog, and I have now, my hippocampus has not stored that, I have implicit memory, so I'm going to now have that physical response of fear that I had at the time. I might start to sweat, my heart might start to beat, I might start to feel kind of fuzzy in my head. I'm having an implicit memory response, but I may not be able to say, oh yeah, man, that dog, it was huge. It was like, you know, I don't even know what kind of dog it was, but it was running right at me. It looked really scary. I may not be able to articulate the specific event. There's no clear retrievable memory of the event unless there is hippocampus involvement, or at some point, someone helps you be able to make that implicit memory something that is explicit. Unfortunately, we still have the implicit memory, right? So we still have all of those physical sensations and the sense of things, like that was scary or that was overwhelming or that was something, but we don't necessarily have the clarity or the ability to put words to the experience, right? We've got the individual puzzle piece, but not the whole picture. The way I describe it for myself, frankly, because I'm not a neuroscientist, I've got just enough information to sort of understand, but is you know, if memory is like puzzle pieces thrown out on a table, what trauma tends to do is it has us pick up one little piece and stare at that piece. And that piece, in again, implicit memory, that piece tends to be like the worst of it. So when we're staring in that at that piece, we're experiencing all the feelings and all the perceptions that go with the worst of it. So why does that matter to us? Well, it matters to us because when someone has been traumatized, they are run through a million questions about where did this happen and who was there and what came next and what was before and why didn't you tell sooner and what color was the shirt and where did you go next and all these specific details. Well, that's explicit memory. And that would be great if that's actually how the brain worked. But unfortunately, that is not how the brain works. It is a very difficult thing to expect of someone who has been highly traumatized. If someone has been traumatized chronically over a long period of time, what the research now tells us is that those stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline, can actually kill off hippocampus cells, making it that much harder for our brain to actually store and retrieve the specific details of traumatic memories. So Kate and I thought that that might be helpful perspective for people to understand how it is that someone can, for many, many years, not have access to a traumatic memory, and then suddenly they do. And to help us to not misinterpret those kinds of events, both as you're listening to Kate's experience, but also as you are thinking about the many people that you might encounter, maybe you have before, who you're trying to understand how it is all of a sudden they're telling you something that you've known this person perhaps for a long, long time, and they never told you this before, and they're trying to explain to you that they didn't even know it themselves. That's how that happens. Our brain is designed to shield us as needed from something that would be crushing. It can cause difficulties when we're trying to make sense of that for other people and for ourselves. Frankly, lots of trauma survivors really feel crazy trying to understand how it is that they didn't know, quote unquote, about their trauma until all of a sudden they do know. So I hope that that is a helpful little tidbit of knowledge for you as you try to hear Kate's experience and also think about how to engage with other folks that you may encounter who have had some kind of trauma story. So Kate and I will be recording again soon the next chunk of what it is that she wants to share. So we hope that you will check back with us in a couple of days. Thank you and have a good day. If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.